Mobius's Code by Francis Rosenfeld. Jennifer 2.0.1. Normally, Jennifer would have questioned her recent experiences. She would have run them through the sieve of reason and dismissed them as the result of excessive stress or, possibly, mind-altering substances, but there comes a point in one's interaction with the truth where things just get too weird to be plastered over with rationalizations. They got so weird, in fact, that she didn't feel safe, or grounded, in this place that used to be so familiar, and yearned to go back to that new sandbox upstairs which, at least, provided her with some shelter and quiet space to think and be with herself. The world had turned, overnight, into uncharted territory, a place where everything could happen, and goodness knows, the expectation of what everything could be had been significantly expanded from what she used to assume. Nothing was what she thought it was, not her life, not her job, not her friends, not her love life, not her home, not her wherewithal, not her future, not even her mother. If somebody had asked her, right then and there, how she was going to cope with the changes, she would have told them that she wasn't able to, but there was nobody there to ask her or notice, no immediate need or obligation to attend to, no plans for the future, and nothing permanent, not even death. For a few hours she contemplated the fact that she might have, in fact, died and gone to hell, and this was to be her eternal punishment, tumbling through a constantly morphing existence with all her anchors to reality cut. After she was done feeling sorry for herself, she looked around and had to admit that if this was hell, it felt quite posh and comfortable. The sun was shining through the dense foliage of the magnolia tree in front of her window, the birds were singing up a storm, and the perfume of the barely open magnolia flowers suffused the air. Jennifer felt unsettled and she couldn't tell why, and upon further analysis she realized that this was the first time in her life when she didn't have anything to do. She opened her planner and stared at the delineation mark, May 21st, which stood like a rift between the before and the now. Every page was blank after that day, and even the recurring activities which she had diligently scribbled down ahead of time, so she would not forget about them, were gone without a trace. "This is your time of death, Jennifer," she told herself. "Face it, you are dead." She remembered stories she had heard about people who died and didn't know it, and who continued to roam the earth for centuries, unaware of the passing of time or the changes in their environment. "I'm not going to stick around as an earthbound ghost," she decided. She scrubbed her mind for whatever information she could remember about ghosts and spirits, subjects she had never paid attention to before because, frankly, she considered them fairy tales, and remembered that she was supposed to look for the light, whatever that was. She looked and looked, but no light appeared anyway, and after a while she got tired and her feet went to sleep because she'd been sitting on them for too long. She waited, unnerved, for the pins and needles to go away, mulling in her mind the absurdity of not being done with this irritating physical sensation nonsense, now that she was, supposedly, here only in spirit. She was startled from her rumination by a very insistent doorbell. "Jen, I've been calling for 10 minutes, have you forgotten? We were supposed to meet for lunch today," her former co-worker chirped cheerfully. "Come on, I don't have much time, I can't be late for my break, I have a meeting." She grabbed Jennifer with one hand, and Jennifer's purse with the other, and pushed her friend firmly out the door into the street. "But I'm not ready," Jennifer wanted to protest, because she thought she'd spent all her time since waking up in her pajamas, pondering whether she was living or dead, and was shocked to notice that she was, in fact, all dressed up and ready to go. "You should tell me all about that new consulting business of yours," her friend continued, excited. "You know, I miss our chats. I was really sad when you quit your job, but I see how this could be so much better for you." "But I didn't quit my job," Jennifer thought, and was just about to ask her friend for details about the new consulting business she supposedly had now. "Come on, Jennifer, don't be holding out on me. What kind of work are you doing?" Her friend stared, curious. "What on earth am I going to say now? I have no idea what it is that people think I'm doing. I'm going to get my ears caught in my own story the second I open my mouth." Jennifer started to panic. "Calm down, Jennifer. Calm down, Jennifer." As she calmed down, situational awareness returned. "What am I talking about? If I'm already dead, all of this should be irrelevant. I could tell her I'm trading spices in Zanzibar for all it would matter." For a second, just a short second, she was really tempted to construct a story based on this particular legend, only to realize, to her chagrin, that she didn't know enough about Zanzibar to make it borderline believable. "I should have paid more attention in school, maybe I could have learned something about that place. Why don't I know anything about anything?" she thought, mad at herself for her own ignorance. "That's okay if you can't tell me, I don't mean to pry," Her former colleague misinterpreted her hesitation. "I'm just happy for you, that's all. You look great. This new life really seems to agree with you." The coworker continued munching on her salad. "I envy you, you know? It's a zoo at work, but you do remember, don't you?" Jennifer did remember. "Oh my god, look at the time." The former jumped to her feet, almost upturning the table in the process. "I'm late for a meeting, I'm going to be in so much trouble. Can you settle the tab, Jen? I'm sorry to leave you like this," she said, embarrassed, dropped a couple of bills on the table and ran out the door. Jennifer waited for the check, and after she was finished, she found herself again with nothing to do. She got out of the restaurant and walked the streets she knew so well for a good half hour, eagerly seeking anything at all that stood out from the ordinary. She found nothing. She turned the corner onto her street, half expecting the house to not be there, but it was. "No sane person doubts whether they will find their home at its regular address, Jennifer," she told herself. "You really need help." She walked up the steps, convinced that this whole deal about life and death was the result of delusional thinking, and when she reached the door, she found a kitten on the doormat. A black kitten. It was very cute and friendly, and bolted into Jennifer's house the moment the door opened. "This isn't happening." Jennifer's newly acquired conviction dissolved in the mist of uncertainty. That was fast. Mobius looked at his watch, pleased. What was it? 14 hours. Not bad for a beginner. "You are not here," Jennifer continued, nursing her state of denial. "None of this is real, it's all in my head." She stared at the kitten, who was very much there, and looked back at her with large, curious eyes. It meowed loudly and then started wandering through the kitchen in search of kibble. "You are not here," she said out loud. Mobius crumpled a sheet of paper and threw it at her head. It hurt. "Jennifer, could you please summon a modicum of focus? You're all over the place," he continued. "Come. This is what comes from letting other people draft your life script for you. Now you have a secret mission in Zanzibar. Please thank your friend. You should be talking. You're the one writing life scripts for us poor humans." Jennifer started a fight, forgetting for a moment that she was talking to someone who was not supposed to exist. "At least I'm reasonably competent at it," Mobius mumbled, displeased. "I'm not sure this was a good idea. I'd rather write your life for you than watch your coworkers, third cousins twice removed, and the guy who's temping as a mailman write it for you. If you don't manage to summon some focus or find an area of interest, everybody is going to stuff your life full with drab details. It pains me to look." "That's not true. I am my own person," Jennifer protested, unconvinced, remembering how she'd been literally dragged out of the house to the restaurant and back, with no input from her part. Even the kitten had been Mobius's idea. How on earth did it show up, anyway, she wondered. He must have brought it, she was sure of it. "Enjoy Zanzibar," he burst her bubble. "Such denial, I'm at my wit's end. What do I need to do to convince you?" "You brought the cat," she confronted him. In a manner of speaking, he contemplated the accuracy of the sentence. "Give it some time, you'll figure it out. By the way, I think your kitten is hungry, there must be some cat food in the cupboard." "Why would I keep cat food in the house?" Jennifer asked, irritated. "For the cat, of course," Mobius replied. "But I don't have a cat," she snapped. "Could have fooled me," he pointed at the black kitten, who was very much there and looked hungry indeed. Jennifer gave up on trying to find an explanation, opened the cupboard, where she found the cat food, filled the kitty bowl and placed it on the floor. The kitten started munching eagerly. "It doesn't have a golden collar," she noticed. "Finally, you're paying attention," Mobius blurted, exasperated. Courtesy of her secret consultant gig in Zanzibar, Jennifer didn't have to worry about explaining her daily activities for a while. Her friend had inadvertently given her the gift of a plausible life story, and she used it, grateful, to allay worries and curiosity from one and all. "But what will I do about basic necessities?" She made one final effort to protest. "What did you do about the cat food?" Mobius pointed out the obvious. "Are we done now? We need to go out." They took a leisurely stroll along the neighborhood streets, all the way to the old city center, a charming place that Jennifer loved, because it was filled with small shops, ice cream parlors and cafes, and it always made her feel like she was on vacation. She didn't notice them at first, but as they got closer to their destination, cats seemed to show up from everywhere. The old city center was swarming with friendly felines, most of them black, perched on top of white picket fences, looking down from the rooftops, lounging under the cafe tables and chairs, and curled up in the concrete planters, in the shade of broad foliage. Moreover, there were cat posters in the window of the framing center, cat covers for the books on display at the bookstore, and cat commercials on TV at the pub. Nervous about this unexpected discovery, Jennifer spilled her coffee on the table, and the black liquid settled in the vague shape of a cat. "This is surreal," Jennifer whispered, mostly to herself, and was surprised to hear Mobius reply. "This is design," he said. "Won't people call somebody to take me away if they see me talking to myself?" she asked, slightly uncomfortable. "Why would they?" Mobius patted Jennifer's hand to reassure her. "I'm very much here. What's with all the cats?" she eventually managed to ask, fresh out of her original shock. The prototype was a little vague. "It's what we call the long tail of intent. You get echoes, reverberations of the original design." He pointed at one of the book covers in the bookstore window. "See? That one has a collar. So, what's going to happen now? We're going to overpopulate the world with black cats?" Jennifer asked, worried. "No. The trend fades after a while, when you no longer pay attention to your original intent. It's going to be a while, though." Jennifer was still staring at the cats, incredulous. "Interest and focus are your most precious currencies, Jennifer," he continued. "Don't waste them on things you don't want." They finished their coffee in the mellow light of the sunset, and as she watched the sun go down behind the hills in the distance, Jennifer noticed that their darkened contours too were approximating the outline of a cat. Mobius had been right twice that day. The cat trend lasted for a while and everybody found a reason to rationalize it away, that is if they noticed it at all. It is amazing how little time people spend paying attention to their surroundings. As long as strange occurrences can reasonably fit into the context people accept as real, no one gives them a second thought. Who has time to waste on acknowledging a sudden jump in cat population? As time went by, Jennifer settled into this new life, if she could call it that. Mobius was a stickler for clarity and corrected her every time she tried to call her continued existence by the wrong name. She'd given the matter some thought and chose some monikers to describe it more accurately, among which being and presence competed for the title. "That's the problem with humans, you can't see beyond your experiences," Mobius complained. "You think only in terms of life and death, because those are the only states you know." "Presence," he mocked. "What are you, a ghost?" "Am I?" Jennifer jumped at the chance. "I'm not going to dignify that with an answer. You're wasting my time." He got up to leave. "Listen, since you're so bent on living, so to speak, go live. Get it out of your system. You have plenty of time. I'll be around if you change your mind." Jennifer watched him disappear, wondering if he really meant it and half expecting him to pop back in the other room. He didn't. A week passed, then a month, then 2 months, which she spent reorganizing her music collection and visiting her mother, who, as always, had some very suitable potential dates lined up for her and deplored the absence of grandchildren. She went shopping, she went out for coffee, she read many books, she watched movies, she witnessed the cat trend slowly dissipate and she entertained very deep philosophical thought about the nature of existence. After 2 months she got bored. "This is absolutely unacceptable." Jennifer was outraged. "It is completely unacceptable to have a life script that can't even hold one's own interest for more than 2 months. I wish I could strangle Mobius for writing such a drab scenario for me. Don't they have any standards?" She paused for a second to acknowledge that the only reason she had any awareness that her life was not all that was because she'd been offered this broader perspective, this option 3, being she decided to call it, so as not to offend the angel, and would her existence have continued on its normal path, she would have been too tired from worrying about every one of its little pointless details to even think of needing a purpose. Come to think of it, according to the know-it-all, she was supposed to be dead by now. She moped about these two versions of her, both equally unpalatable, and went back to version number 3. "Surely given ample time and lack of hardship I should be able to find something to do with myself. I'm not really that bland, am I?" She looked at herself in the mirror, and her reflection stared her back, unconvinced. "Think, Jennifer," she pressed. "What do you like to do?" That thought provided her with material for a couple of hours of thinking. She went through all her childhood hobbies, since that was the last time when she had a few hours to spend on herself, and dug up scrapbooking and stamp collecting, baking and a few other activities that promised to be somewhat fun. "I can't spend eternity collecting stamps," she blurted at her mirror reflection. "What kind of person is offered eternal life and plans to spend it collecting stamps? Face it, Jennifer, you really are boring." She felt a little bit like poor lottery winners who, faced with a vast fortune, can't make up their mind on how to spend it and hold on to their experience of lack because they are too afraid of a new life that offers so much promise but feels so unfamiliar. "I should do something worthwhile with this chance," she pepped herself up. I ought to. Life is very ironic. It always gives you things you didn't know you wanted when you least expect them, and then makes it absolutely impossible for you to avail yourself of them, or live without them. Or with them. Add immortality to the mix and you got yourself a gigantic cosmic joke. God's jokes tend to run a bit on the side of larger than life. Just because one has the time, the means and the opportunity, that doesn't necessarily mean one has the talent and the passion to put them to good use. Jennifer assumed that Mobius either forgot or didn't have time to write those last two variables into the script. After much soul-searching, which ended up revealing layer after boring layer of uninspiring thought, she was surprised to realize she really missed unconstructed space, which she didn't get much of a chance to explore during her short visit, and wished she could go back there and try to grow a bean sprout, or make a puffy cloud or something. That sounded fun. She wondered how on earth she could go back there without calling Mobius, who would surely patronize her and roll his eyes. She sighed, defeated, got dressed and decided to go for a walk to clear her mind, and when she opened the front door she recognized the familiar lines of the empty exhibition space, even the way they were, shrouded in darkness. A sensor detected her presence and all the lights went on, as if on command. "Ask and ye shall receive," Jennifer mumbled to herself, not knowing whether to be delighted or afraid. The unconstructed space looked exactly the way she remembered it from last time, a little messy and impersonal, as it is fitting for a place that must accommodate any personality or demand. She liked it though, because with all the weird things that had been thrown at her lately, it seemed to offer some consistency and stability in the middle of endless sudden shifts. She looked around for a place to sit, and a generic chair appeared. It was clunky and uncomfortable, and even looking at it made Jennifer's rear end hurt, so she gave it a little thought, while she watched changes slowly taking place, first a cushion, then some armrests, then some adjustments to the curve of its back. When the modifications were finished, she sat in the chair, half expecting it to dematerialize and let her fall on her bum, but it didn't. It felt reasonably comfortable and Jennifer burst out laughing when she realized that if and when she decided to return to reality, she would very likely find that chair in her room, as well as almost everywhere else. There must be some controls to adjust the quantities. "I can't populate the universe with whatever random thought crosses my mind," she noted wisely. This concept prompted her to take a brief look around, which revealed an amorphous array of things, completely unrelated to each other, the inventory of her undisciplined mind: clouds, hats, purses, a horse, silver candlesticks, a carved wooden armoire, and last but not least, so many mirrors. She could see herself in all of them, and for a second she panicked that she had created endless copies of herself before she regained her wits and realized they were only reflections. "Jennifer," she thought to herself, "if you have any brains at all, you'll call Mobius right now, before you accidentally start modifying the composition of Earth's atmosphere." She thought he would appear, like everything else had appeared in this space, but it seemed that summoning an angelic presence was beyond her current capabilities. She was peeved. "And to think I trusted him to turn me into a superhero." "I never agreed to turn you into a superhero," he protested. "How did you know?" Jennifer mumbled, embarrassed. "I didn't call you," she protested. "Of course you did. You think like a human. What seems to be the problem?" He looked around, slightly amused by the jumbled mix. "It looks like you've got some cleaning to do." "Not that," he pointed out, upon watching Jennifer try to move some of the stuff around to make a path through the mess. "Your brain." He bent down and picked up an object which was gleaming softly under a pile of blankets and folded laundry. It was a golf club. He stared at it in disbelief for a second, trying to figure out the thought process behind its creation. A horrible thought froze Jennifer into a wretched panic when she realized that all of these random objects were now populating the earth and creating an apparent mess. "Don't worry about the atmosphere," Mobius replied to her first panicked thought. "I told you, we have safety protocols in place. You're not the first person to bless the world with chairs." He put the golf club down, cleaned his hands and continued. "I see you found your way back here. That's encouraging. You had enough of normal life, I take it?" "What life?" Jennifer frowned, forgetting about all the mess she'd created and finding her way back to being dissatisfied with the quality of her script. "While there, sport. Put it on pause first, or you're not going to like the world you'll have to go back to. No negatives, got it?" Never in her life did Jennifer get something with more unquestionable clarity. A little rose bush blossomed at her feet in response to her retreating into happy thoughts. "Can I go home now, please? I don't think I'm safe here," Jennifer whimpered. "Sadly, Jennifer, you can't escape your cognitive mess by running away from it. What makes you think you'll be safer back in reality while harboring the same thoughts?" Put some order inside your mind and you'll be safe anywhere. Especially here. She looked despondent, so he gave up. Okay, fine. Let's take you home. The chair was waiting for them there, naturally, and so was the golf club, the unexpected object which seemed to amuse Mobius to no end. May I ask? He started, picking it up again and staring at it. No. Jennifer grabbed it out of his hands and threw it back on the floor. Never mind, no need to get upset over it. Just curious, is all. Why is all of this stuff still here? Jennifer snapped, annoyed that all the mess she had conjured the week before was waiting for her in the exhibition space exactly as she had left it, only it seemed worse now that she had decided to actually look at it. She was somehow hoping that this miraculous sandbox of hers was self-cleaning, so she would always find it spotless when she returned. Oh, because you think all of your future projects will only take a couple of hours? Mobius asked. Of course the sandbox isn't automatically cleaned out, you should hope so. You decide what stays and what goes, usually that is a good thing, right now, not so much. Need help sorting out all of this stuff? I think I need a giant trash bin for everything to fit in. There is nothing here worth keeping. Jennifer looked around at the random piles of junk. I wouldn't be so sure about that. Why don't you try sorting these objects before you throw them away? Just put some labels on them, see what you made. It would be much easier to start over, Jennifer mumbled. Not worth the effort. Remember what I told you, Jennifer, nothing is useful or worthless, you assign it the value of useful or worthless. It's all you, this, he pointed at the large, poorly lit room, filled to the ceiling with piles of random junk, is all you. You must have cared enough to create all of this, you can't create things you don't care about. My bet is half of this stuff is generated by negative emotions, anger, frustration, guilt. That's why sorting them is important. So, please, indulge me, will you? Besides, I really want to know about the golf club. That's a concept so strong it followed you home on the first try. It must be very important to you, and, judging by your reaction, in an unpleasant way. Why don't you tell me, since you wrote the living code? Jennifer tried to avoid the question. It can't be that detailed, otherwise all the hosts wouldn't have enough time to keep up with the replacement rate. You know, the more I learn about this, the less I want to know. I'm a person, not a headcount. Why don't you leave me alone to sort my garbage in peace? Not this time, I'm afraid. He found a chair in the pile, dusted it, and sat down. I think you should start. This is going to take a while. It took the whole day, and at the end of it everything was neatly sorted into piles of like stuff. Surprisingly, there were way too many objects but not that many piles. You know, you could have made yourself a sorter. That way you wouldn't have had to do all of this by hand. Thanks for the belated advice, she snapped. She was tired, cranky and shocked at the large number of blankets piling up in the corner. What was the usefulness of having an angel watch over you if you had to do everything by yourself? Blankets. Of all the things in the world, I should open a store. I seem to have produced enough of them. But just one golf club, Mobius noted. Enough with the golf club. Jennifer lost the last of her patience. My point is, whatever you created in one of those piles corresponds to a recurrent wish. Say you wanted a TV, you ordered it and it didn't arrive, so you ordered another TV, which also didn't arrive, and so on and so forth, but you didn't know that the delivery time, depending on the supplier, was 4 to 6 weeks. By the end of 2 months you'd be swimming in TVs and won't have any resources left for anything else. One or two beautiful blankets would have been enough. Apparently in this case the delivery time was over 30 years, Jennifer commented bitterly. Your blankets never arrived, did they? It's not about the blankets, she growled. It's never about the blankets. That's why you had to sort this out all by yourself. You don't really need all this stuff, Jennifer. Everybody has different piles occupying the corners of their sandbox, and everybody is trying to hide them. I guess there is nothing more humiliating to people than a secret wish that was never fulfilled. Who are you to judge me? Jennifer got suddenly furious. It's not like I haven't heard enough psychobabble in my life. Come to think of it, there's probably a symbolic pile of it crowding up a corner somewhere, if I waste my time to find it. I'm not judging you. I can't even understand you. Angels don't have the same emotions humans do. I just wanted to tell you that you can have anything you want in here. You don't need to stockpile. You just wish it and it is done. Delivery times only apply to the world below. Maybe I should move here, then. At least until things make their way downstairs. Jennifer inferred the next logical step. I'd have to clean up all this mess first. I wonder if I can make a sunset in here, she hesitated, still caught up in the web of things that are and are not possible. She was, for all practical purposes, indoors.